Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of what Republican presidential candidates are calling Obama's war on religion and what a growing number of women in America are calling the Republican war on women. Stephanie Sacchino, a professor of economics at the University of Vermont, who has done research on the role of religiosity in resisting and retarding gender equality, joins us. Then we will speak with Saul Alinsky's protege, Nicholas von Hoffman, about his mentor, who he worked alongside of for a decade as a community organizer on the streets of Chicago. Since Newt Gingrich continually calls Obama a Saul Alinsky radical, we will discuss Nicholas von Hoffman's new book, Radical, A Portrait of Saul Alinsky, to determine what it is about this mother of all community organizers that has Cesar Chavez, Dick Armey, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, and the Tea Party studying his tactics and strategies. Then finally, following a recent visit to Israel by National Security Advisor Tom Donilon, we will speak with author and Middle East expert Juan Cole about Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's insulting remarks leaked to the Israeli press, where Netanyahu and Defense Minister Ehud Barak accused an American war hero and chairman of the Joint Chiefs, General Dempsey, of serving Iranian interests. Joining us now is Stephanie Sacchino, who's a professor of economics at the University of Vermont. Her current research explores the relationship between inequality, growth, and development, and explores the effect of gender equality on macroeconomic outcomes, with a recent paper investigating the role of religiosity in affecting attitudes about gender equality, as well as gender equality itself. Welcome to Background Briefing, Stephanie Sacchino.
Yes.
You've written a paper recently which basically looks into the role of religiosity and how it affects gender equality. Mm-hmm. Tell me, your paper's called Help or Hindrance, Religion's Impact on Gender Inequality and Attitudes and Outcomes. And the reason, of course, I'm talking with you is that we have very much in as we speak, of course, the presidential candidates are debating down in Arizona. But most of the Republican presidential candidates are calling, suggesting that President Obama is engaged in a war on religion. Mm-hmm. And conversely, a number of women in this country are saying that the Republican Party has a war on women. So that's the context. My understanding is that what your research has uncovered is that, first of all, the United States has a higher gender inequality, a worse gender inequality than other industrialized countries, and that there is a global phenomenon that the more religious a country is, the less gender equality there is. I mean, I take it that Saudi Arabia would be the exemplar of that.
Well, Saudi Arabia and others, but you stated it exactly right, that when we look at gender attitudes, and gender attitudes are revealed in questions like, when jobs are scarce, men have more right to a job than women. Men make better political leaders than women. Children suffer when mothers work outside the home. So those kind of questions reveal attitudes about what the appropriate gender roles are in society. And what we find is that the more religious an individual, the more gender unequal their attitudes. And then in this study, what was really surprising in this study and is unique to, in terms of research that's been done on this, is that those attitudes, those religious attitudes, actually convert into worse outcomes for women relative to men across roughly 60 or 70 countries. And you're absolutely right that in a number of indicators, the U.S. actually fares much worse than a number of other industrialized countries.
And no other industrialized country is having the kind of political debate that we're having here, I take it. At least I don't think. I mean, first, my understanding is that no other industrialized country even has debates abortion. Yet it's a major aspect of our political dialogue here.
Right. Exactly. And most other, just to give you an example of how this plays out in real terms, and most industrialized countries have paid parental leave for mothers as well as fathers. The United States is the only industrialized country without paid parental leave.
So what is it about the country? Is it to do with the original founders? Is that our DNA, the Puritans are alive and well in our DNA?
Well, I don't think that that's really what's going on in the United States. I think, in some ways, there has been some progress in gender attitudes, but I see that, in the last 20 years that we've really stalled, we've really failed to make significant progress. And that's coincided with the greater intrusion of religion into politics in the United States. And at least the analysis that I did showed that, that's one of the avenues by which religiosity has negative effects. It has negative effects on people's attitudes, such as employers, for example, but it also can have a direct negative effect on policies that might be gender equitable, like equal investments in women's education or in rural health care clinics that would benefit women or, for example, paid parental leave.
Well, but what's going on now, Stephanie Sacchino, again, professor of economics at the University of Vermont, who has done a recent study, Help or Hindrance, Religion's Impact on Gender Inequality in Attitudes and Outcomes. What's the most recent spat that we had and which led to this idea that on the part of the Republican candidates for president who often mention this, that they it's become a kind of campaign issue that President Obama is allegedly declaring a war on religion when in reality this all came out of the healthcare reform as it affects Catholic charities and hospitals or Catholic-run hospitals, and it's been blown up into a continuing war on religion, even though the president himself compromised. So let's walk through that situation. What seems to be inherent in that, and I guess inherent in much of what Rick Santorum represents, and in many ways it would be a good thing if Rick Santorum became the nominee, because I think we would finally have a test in this country about how pervasive and powerful religious dogma is in our politics. Because the assumption is, particularly on the part of people that are sort of nascent theocrats like Santorum, is that they represent the dominant view. And my feeling is that it's actually a minority view. What's your understanding of the kind of religiosity that both Santorum and also Gingrich represent? The attitude is that it's the minority, or at least the superior position, but it's not necessarily. I mean, I guess the disconnect is that the whole flap was over contraception, and it still remains the real subtext. Mm-hmm. But yet 98% of Catholic women use contraceptives. So, there's the disconnect. I'm trying to get is there any data on that?
I think that your data are accurate in terms of contraceptive use. I mean, I think that people hold conflicting views on this, and if you frame this as an issue of religious freedom, any time you use the word freedom in U.S. culture, people immediately are for freedom. And so if it's framed as government restricting religious freedom, then there's a lot of support for the position of the Catholic Church. But I think that, what's important for us to do is to unravel what's going on here. There's nothing here that requires individuals to do something that they don't want to do with their bodies. In other words, we're not requiring people to take contraceptives, for example. But what is happening is that the Catholic Church, for example, in its Catholic hospitals and so forth, doesn't want to cover contraceptive care. And there's this isn't about not wanting to cover it for Catholic women even. They don't want to cover it for any women. So in some sense, they're really circumscribing the rights of women who are non-Catholics. And what's particularly disturbing, I mean, I think it's really important to unravel these arguments and be clear about what's going on. The issue here is, in the new health care bill, institutions are required to provide preventative care at no cost, no additional charge. And contraceptive care is considered preventative care. So the church is essentially saying it doesn't want to provide preventative care to women, including those who are non-Catholic who don't necessarily share the same attitudes. Now, in my view, that's not a violation of religious freedom because it's not requiring somebody to do something with their bodies or break a rule about themselves that they don't hold. So I think that the arguments are really misplaced.
Well, it seems to me that that what's being argued here on the by Santorum and by the Catholic bishops is that they feel that their moral standards have to be imposed on the rest of us, as opposed to on the basis of a canard that somehow the government is intruding into their moral territory and forcing them to do something that's against their conscience, which is not the case, is it?
Well, I mean, I think you've said it much more succinctly than I did. I've thought about this, you know, I have been thinking about this great deal. I mean, you know, in many cases in the U.S., as in other governments, people may have private opinions that are biased, that are discriminatory, and they're allowed to hold those, but not necessarily in the public sphere. So employers are not allowed to racially discriminate, for example. And there are many cases in which religious organizations have held discriminatory attitudes towards various groups and so forth. And I think it's really a question of human progress and to what extent religious organizations that have ideas that really impinge essentially on human rights. In this case, it really is about human rights. Reproductive rights are human rights. And so is it okay for religious organizations to restrict those rights in the name of religion? Or as a society, are we going to say that, you know, in the privacy of your own institutions, you can hold those views, but you can't act in ways to circumscribe those rights when it comes to health care, when it comes to access to jobs, for example?
Well, we have, again, let me remind the audience, I'm speaking with Stephanie Sacchino, who's a professor of economics at the University of Vermont. Her current research explores the relationship between inequality, growth, and development, and explores the effects of gender equality on macroeconomic outcomes, with a recent paper investigating the role of religiosity in affecting attitudes about gender equality, as well as gender equality itself, and the paper's Help or Hindrance: Religion's Impact on Gender Inequality in Attitudes and Outcomes. We've had, just in the context of this argument, this canard that's out there now that President Obama is involved in a war on religion, and you know Billy Graham's son Franklin Graham just was on MSNBC the other day reinforcing this pervasive notion amongst evangelicals in this country that, first of all, I don't know what the polling is, but a considerable number of evangelical voters believe that President Obama is not even a Christian, that he's a Muslim and an imposter with a fake birth certificate, and somehow he's from Kenya. But that aside, there's also this new attack from Franklin Graham and others. Not just that it's a war and he's conducting a war on religion, but also that he is a supporter of the Muslim faith because he's allegedly his father and his grandfather, etc., none of which is true, Muslims. So the general propaganda that we're hearing out here is the notion that this illegitimate president is conducting some kind of government jihad against religion. And in the real world, we've just witnessed something in Virginia which absolutely flies in the face of that, and in fact presents the opposite picture, which is at the behest of the religious right, the governor of Virginia tried to impose a very invasive procedure on the women of Virginia. Anybody who wanted to get an abortion had to have be subjected to a transvaginal ultrasound, which one is medically unnecessary and two expensive, and the expense has to be borne by the woman who's being forced to essentially have this invasive probe, which according to the FBI is the equivalent of rape. Look at the outcome, pay for it, and have it put in her medical file. Now, fortunately, a lot of women and men demonstrated, and the Republican governor, who's a protege of Pat Robertson's, apparently has sort of tabled it. Now they have a different version of forced ultrasound that is not quite so invasive, but nevertheless, women are forced into it. Isn't that a kind of textbook case of government intruding into the lives of citizens?
Well, I think that it is, right? And, you know, I mean, what's interesting is that much of what is propelling that is religion, right? There's a religious context to the view that somehow abortion should be circumscribed. And I think it's another example of, in this case, the religious right condoning government intervention. So they excoriate Obama for interfering in religious organizations through this health care bill that mandates contraceptive care. And at the same time, they're simultaneously intervening vigorously themselves in a way that they then argue is justified. And I think these anomalies and these contradictory stances really need to be brought to the light and discussed more cogently, and that we really need to begin to examine just how far religion has gone in interfering with life in America, and in particular in influencing public policy. And to me, it seems like we've gone a long ways away from the view that there should be a separation of church and state, and increasingly we're seeing a rather stealthy influence of religion on politics in the United States that I think is problematic insofar as that it really promotes, it contributes to gender inequality. With a great deal of research telling us that gender inequality is bad for economic growth, it's bad for living standards. So it ultimately can negatively affect all of us and the economy as a whole, and those contradictions don't seem to be understood.
Well, again, you just have to look at the example of Saudi Arabia, which has more money than God, and yet half of its population live in the 14th century and are not even allowed to drive. And it will never succeed as a modern state, even though it has some of the trappings of modernity. It's a strange. I don't understand the impulse of why men wouldn't want to hold back women. I'm sure. I wish somebody would tell me what that answer
well,
that question.
I think that feminist scholars.
I mean, I have a daughter. I simply cannot understand what that mentality is. Can you help me out a little?
Well, I think that many of us, especially amongst feminist economists, there's some really great work done by, especially an economist by the name of Alyssa Bronstein at Colorado State University, who has written on this topic. And I think the answer is that men benefit materially from gender inequality. They, on average, do less work than women globally, have significantly more power, significantly more leisure time, and, of course, significantly more income. And so I think there's a material basis to gender inequality. And I don't know how hard that is for people to digest, but, you know, that's economists would not be surprised at that, and that therefore motivates men to continue to perpetuate gender inequality.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, Stephanie Sacchino.
Yes, you're very welcome. Thanks so much.
Again, I've been speaking with Stephanie Sacchino, professor of economics at the University of Vermont. She has a her studies, she studies the role of religiosity in restraining and retarding gender equality, and she has a recent paper, Help or Hindrance: Religion's Impact on Gender Inequality in Attitudes and Outcomes. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with Sol Alinsky's protege.
Don't know nothing about my soul.